there a doctor in the house?
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Doctor.
It's time for Advanced Medicine Monday with Dr. Rashid Batar.
I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
I'm a doctor, not a mechanic.
I'm a doctor, not a coal miner.
The doctor is in.
All right, it's time for Advanced Medicine once again with Dr. Rashid Batar here on the Robert Scad Bell Show. And Dr. Batar is going to be a keynote speaker at the big yoga event in Pasadena right into the new year, 2019. He'll be leading that off. And then we've got the big Advanced Medicine Conference May 25th and 26th, and that is going to be in Pasadena, California as well. That's over the Memorial Day weekend, the Saturday and Sunday. And we hope to see you there and plan for it. We've got a lot of exciting news as it will be breaking in the coming weeks, I imagine, Dr. Batar.
Yes, it will be. And we are very excited getting geared up. They just started some of the marketing. So it'll be exciting to see what all happens. We've already started having ticket sales, and considering it's 6 months before the venue, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, we are getting requests, and it's just, you know how it is, longtime listeners to the show say, hey, are you going to give us a little deal like Robert Scott Bell Show listeners? We listen to Advanced Medicine Monday. Is there something going to be a special code for us? I'm thinking probably, but I haven't talked to you about it yet.
Well, actually, Robert, when we had the webinar on December 6th, we had over almost 2,100 people. We had 2,090-some people that registered for the webinar. I don't remember exactly how many, but it was definitely, our goal was 2,000. We had over 2,000 people register for it. And so we did have a special that was made available for all the people that registered for the webinar. And the webinar was on Thursday, and it ran till Sunday midnight. And a lot of people did participate. We have had a lot of calls coming in asking, you know, they didn't get the webinar link till afterwards because they didn't make the show. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to talk to my special projects manager and see if we can extend that for a week.
Okay.
But it was a whole bundle. It was actually two tickets for the price. It was two tickets plus all the DVDs plus the subliminal CDs that correspond with each of the DVDs. I know your options that you narrated. Copy of the book, hard copy, PDF. And there's a whole bunch of other small webinars that we've done before. There's a whole package of things. In fact, the live event that's going to be streamed in May, a copy of that. So there's a whole bundle. It came out to $3,400 or something like that. And we had that for $199 or $179. We even discounted it a little bit more.
That sounds like a 90% off deal like Ty was doing with his stuff. So that's great. So if we can find an extension on that, then we'll let everybody know to take advantage of it, obviously. Let me know when that comes out.
It's actually 95% off, and it's already available at Advanced Medicine. They just go and register. If they go onto their dashboard, which they should already have, they'll see it right there. And if they don't have a dashboard access to Advanced Medicine, then just give them your invitation code. They can go there and they can get access to it right now.
Yeah, so once again, you're
off probably next before Christmas.
All right, your invitation code for Robert Scott Bell Show listeners, Advanced Medicine listeners, 1358, 1358, when you go to advancedmedicine.com. Linked up in the show notes, thanks to Superdon. All right, let me ask you this question, Dr. Batar. You know, people come to you now. You have been through the allopathic medical training, even as a DO, gone through medical school, became a doctor. You've been an ER physician. So you've done things in that realm, and you weren't always as aware as you are today about, you know, things that might be considered integrative, truly holistic, and that kind of thing. But there's an article here about 8 in 10 adults lie to their doctors about their health. Now, I don't know if that only happened like earlier in your career, because when you started doing advanced medicine, I'm thinking, and I could be wrong, they're coming to you and going, I want to tell you everything, Dr. Batar. I don't want to leave anything out. Or am I wrong? Did they even come to you and go, well, I don't want them to know that?
Well, it's actually interesting. I don't think it's necessarily an intentional deception. Sometimes patients come and they're so enamored with their immediate issue, they don't think that the past issues or the historical aspect of their medical condition may be pertinent. Now, in other times, people give you so much more history than you need, but they leave out other parts that are relevant. So I think that's part of it. There's a difference between compliance. You know, if you talk about compliance, I have no issue with compliance anymore in my patients. I think that's the biggest frustration for most doctors is having compliance. But when it comes to the patient not telling the doctor everything about their health. I think it's probably either one, it's an oversight on the patient's part. It might be an oversight on the doctor's part that they didn't ask. It might be just something that the patient doesn't even think is relevant. That's the whole purpose. In fact, it's interesting you bringing this up because that's the whole one of the huge benefits of the head map.
That's right. I see that.
Yeah, it's almost like you set me up for an alley-oop again. You threw the basketball up there and you want me to slam it through. But I know it's one of the studies, and I didn't send this one in. So, but the point is really an interesting point because I think that having the full perspective of the individual, of the patient, becomes important because there are certain subtle nuances that may be overlooked or not even considered. And the head map forces the patient it kind of herds them through the arena that we need them to go through. And it actually forces mm-hmm. the doctor, the provider, to also assess certain areas that they may have overlooked. For example, the emphasis on the liver and the kidneys and the gut, a lot from a conventional standpoint, and even from a non-conventional standpoint, a lot of times doctors give lip service to it, but they don't look at that. They'll start treating the patient immediately for the issue that they're coming with, forgetting that they're using an herb or a mineral or a vitamin or a homeopathic for a symptom relief as opposed to a causation or the actual cause, you know, the root cause aspect. And so I think that this is the reason that the head map has been so effective for our clinic and for the other clinics that have started using it, because without a doctor or the patient or anybody else being aware, it essentially roots out the causation factor without you even being actively seeking it.
Right. Now, in this survey they did, they compiled two different surveys. I think part of the lying probably comes to what you said, that word compliance, like a patient will not be compliant and they'll tell you that they have been, for instance. Or one of the things that they said is that they won't speak up if they disagree with something that the doctor is trying to do for them, right? Let's just say now if you go to a conventional allopathic medical doctor and you already know about the dangers of let's say, antibiotics. You go, you know what, I really would like to take care of my infection in another way. And so the doctor will say, here's an antibiotic. And they might not want to say, I'm not going to take that. And they'll just go away and then come back. Whether they're better or worse, I don't know. But that could be a conflict.
I agree with you. But I think that may be a conflict in people, generally speaking, where they're not authentic. Where they lack authenticity in communication. They lack authenticity in, you know, it's that political correctedness. You know, I'm not supposed to talk back to my doctor. I'm not supposed to, you know.
Well, it could be an intimidation factor. They feel like intimidated. They're like, I don't want to say something that might get the doctor upset, even though it would be much more important for that to occur, because you could also find that maybe this isn't the right doctor for you. We've talked about that you don't have to work with everybody. They come to you and they're like, well, they're clearly not ready to take responsibility for their health. That's not going to be good for you.
That's a very important point. I completely agree. So that could be part of the intimidation aspect is there. Sometimes it also might be a genuine fear that the doctor might disagree with them and minimize them or ridicule them. Sometimes it might be actually, you know, so you said the intimidation factor, but they could also be this thing that they really, based upon their indoctrination, believe that whatever the doctor says is gospel, and they're coming to that, you know, that religiosity aspect that we've talked about before, where whatever the doctor says, it's like religion. You don't argue with it and you follow it. So it could be also a confidence issue, you know, lack of confidence in themselves and their own ability to go down a certain path or ask the doctor about a path that may not be the first line that the doctor would think about. And, you know, this is an interesting point too, Robert. Think about this. Sometimes the doctor may want to tell the patient something, but is hesitant because they don't know how out of the box they can step out and make the doctor and make the patient feel like, wait a second, what kind of place am I at? And the patient may not feel comfortable to ask the doctor, because more and more, as the consciousness of the planet is increasing, there are more doctors that are doing more things out of the box, but they're hesitant to talk to certain patients because they don't know if the patient is going to be open and receptive to that new information. So there's all these different factors.
Dr. Bitar, let me ask you, how then, you know, you have advanced medicine, people know you for that, and I think they would come in and have some awareness already, but not everybody. Maybe there are transitional docs at this point going, how do I communicate to the population at large that might come to me as a patient, for instance? so that I can pre-screen that, right? Because that's another aspect of doctors will get reputations for being certainly very allopathic or integrative or all holistic, but that takes time.
Yeah, I think it comes back to that same word, authenticity. I think that on the planet right now, people are so hungry for the truth, and there's so much BS that we're fed constantly from the media, from, you know, from our religious institutions, from our teachers, from doctrine that we've been led to believe is everything, and there's no other, you know, options out there. Everything from, we've talked about how arrogant it is for human beings to think that we're the only intelligent life in the universe. You know what I'm saying? And there's all these different aspects that comes down to we need to encourage the doctors to speak boldly, to have bold communication, regardless of whether there are ramifications, as long as they're, you know, working with, I'm not saying going out there and break the law or anything like that. What I mean is, you know, informed consent, for example, is a very big thing. You got to give informed consent. Well, give informed consent, but give complete informed consent. Because if you're giving yes. informed consent and you don't talk about, say, homeopathy or as an option, or IV chelation as an option, or a nutritional protocol as an option, then you really haven't given informed consent. So follow the rules and regulations to the T. If they say you got to give informed consent, and give all the other things too. Right? Talk about.
Well, we would add the adjective fully in this case, fully informed consent. What does that mean? It doesn't mean you're giving consent to something because I say the only thing you can do is between this wall and this wall, completely eliminating all of reality outside of those walls. And of course, the training, as you know, in allopathic medicine has been narrowed since the early part of the 20th century with great purpose for, you know, basically the benefit of a pharmaceutical industry as opposed to the benefit of the patient.
Right, that's exactly right. So I think that to give full informed consent is a very important component where nobody can fault you. The medical boards aren't going to fault you for that. They may not be happy with that, but you can yeah. give them that complete. And then on top of that, you also have to give them informed consent about the side effects, the potential side effects, right?
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Well said. Listen, we're up on our first break here. Advanced Medicine on the Robert Scott Bell Show. Dr. Rasha Bitar bringing it as he always does. We're going to talk about chronic inflammation as a source for all disease. How does the medical community look at it, though, versus when we do advanced medicine? How do we look at it? And then we've got some raw milk discussion and chemo versus cancer as well.
Live around the world.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Robert Scott Bell.
In the health world through the power of radio. It's the Robert Scott Bell Show.
All right, we got it. Chronic inflammation. Oh, I hope you don't got it. I know I had it for a lot of years. Dr. Bitar, last hour I opened talking about intermittent fasting, how I was incapable of going an hour or two between meals without having to eat again years ago. And of course, by really replenishing the good minerals that are necessary, including the chromium. You know, now I could work out in the morning really intensely. I hadn't eaten since yesterday at dinner, and I'm going through mid-afternoon. I'm like, well, I'm still not hungry. I'm fine. Now, that was radical to think that that could be possible for folks that can't see a way out of going an hour without eating, right? But it can be done by transforming your health, your vitality, your terrain, by giving the body what it needs, getting rid of the things that it doesn't, and, of course, finding your mission and purpose in life. Things can change, and that's, you know, part of what advanced medicine is all about.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I was the same way when I was in the military, especially when I was going through that. I went about six and a half years where I went through the bodybuilding phase, and all natural, and, you know, no meat, no red meat for 5.5 years, no Kit Kat bars for 5.5 years. Of course, I don't eat Kit Kat bars. Haven't had one probably in about 15 years now, but back then, I was addicted to Sprite and Kit Kat bars. And it's interesting that I went through this period where, for this 5.5 years, Robert, I could not go 2 hours without eating. And I had probably, I dropped down, my lowest ever was about a 4% body fat, which was very unhealthy. I, you know, was constant, had headaches and all this stuff, but it was 4% body fat is on a regular level in fact, at any point is not healthy.
And, yeah, you see, your menstrual period stopped altogether.
Exactly, completely stopped, and it was very, very problematic, as you can imagine. It's very strange, but it's actually very similar because there is a personality change that occurs regardless of whether you're a man or a woman. Actually, I think it's worse for a woman when they're bodybuilding and restricting fluids and intake of nutrients, and then sometimes these people are also taking anabolic steroids, and so there's all sorts of weird things that end up happening. But the point that I was going to make was I couldn't go 2 hours without eating myself, and even when I stopped the bodybuilding phase, I still had that issue going 2 hours without eating. And I'll tell you, I am routinely, for the last probably year and a half, 2 years, off and on, you know, during the Muslim month of fasting, during Ramadan, you fast anyway, so you don't eat or drink anything for whatever, from sunrise to sunset. So if it's during winter, it's probably about anywhere from 8 to 10 hours, maybe 11 hours. If it's during the summer, it can be, you know, 14 to 16 hours. But even off the fasting schedule from a spiritual standpoint, from a religious standpoint, I have, over the last probably year and a half to 2 years, routinely done a 16-hour intermittent fast without any problem. And it's almost, I don't even think about it. To go 23 hours takes a little bit more effort, but not much more effort. So I will eat my evening meal. I get up the next day. I may have a drink, the Boutard Kickstart drink with the lemon and the apple cider vinegar and all that stuff. And that's it. I don't eat anything. And I may think about it 1 or 2 in the afternoon, 3 in the afternoon. But generally speaking, I won't have anything to eat again until the evening. And I tell you, I feel healthier that way. I feel better that way.
Right.
And to another level.
Yeah, I think we look back at the history of humanity, it wasn't that we had a drive-through on every corner or an ability to just grab stuff. I mean, there were times where you had to go periods of time without eating. And if you're hypoglycemic, you think you're going to die. It feels that bad and scary. Yeah. So what does that say about how we should be versus how we've become? And again, I grew up on a standard American diet, so I know I was minerally deficient. Once I got that in order, it's like I find my ability to go longer and longer periods of time. And you're right, there's a spiritual benefit to fasting as well. But the physical one, if you can start there, at least start there.
Yeah, and the fasting versus an intermittent fast, you know, some people, it depends on what you're fasting from, too. If you're just fasting from solid intake or any intake at all, water, sometimes, you know, on a spiritual fast, then you abstain from any indulgence, including sex or anything else. So there's different types of fasting, but if you're just talking about it from a nutritional standpoint, intermittent fasting is, in my opinion, one of the most effective things to do. There's when I do ozonation, when we do ozone autohemotherapy, Robert, when we draw the blood out of the patient, the two times that I've seen my blood absolutely being the brightest red is either one after sprinting or two after fasting. Those are the two times when we see our blood, you know, patient's blood, my blood, absolutely crimson, beautiful red. Otherwise, it's usually darker. And when you deal with, like, a cancer patient, for example, we will see their blood is almost black.
Yeah.
So the cleaner it looks, the more reflection, the cleaner we are. And when we come back from break, I want to bring up another thing about fasting.
Okay. Well, let's continue talking about the fasting issue. I like it. And, of course, it does relate to inflammation or reduction of inflammation or maybe elimination of it as well. We'll put it all together for you because this is Advanced Medicine on the Robert Scott Bell Show with Dr. Rasha Bittar. Links are up in the show notes right now, robertscottbell.com.
Who'd you say that masked man was?
It's a bird.
It's a plane. It's
Robert Scott Bell.
Here I come to save the day.
Robert Scott Bell Show.
Advanced Medicine continues. Dr. Rasha Bittar with us, advancedmedicine.com. Links are in the show notes at robertscottbell.com. The upcoming Advanced Medicine Conference. If you want tickets, we've got them, and you'll get a better deal here through the Robert Scott Bell Show. If you go to advancedmedicine.com and you're not already connected to the IDFW, there's an invitation code for all of y'all. 1358, 1358 is the code. And all the links are in the show notes, thanks to Super Don. We were talking about fasting, and maybe as it relates to chronic inflammation or really any kind of disease state, that we could find improvement. The only, if there is a caveat, and there may be more than this, Dr. Bittar, is if people are brutally minerally deficient, and they try to fast, right? And they're in that state like I was, like you were. You can't go an hour or two without eating. I tend to want to rebuild their systems up to where they can do it, but maybe there is some benefit to short intermittent fast. I don't know. What is your experience there?
Yeah, I think that the short intermittent fast has so many different benefits, many benefits that perhaps science hasn't even elucidated yet. But I agree with you that if you're nutriently deficient, you're low in minerals or essential B vitamins, or, you know, there may be other cofactors or enzymes that you may be deficient in, it's going to make fasting in any level, whether it's intermittent fast or a 24-hour, 48-hour fast, it's going to make it very difficult. What I wanted to bring up before the break, though, was something else which ties directly into fasting and actually to this inflammation component that we're going to talk about next. And that is, from a dietary standpoint, you've got the vegans and you've got the people that believe in an all-meat diet. You've got the high-protein, low-carb, and all this stuff. I came across some really interesting information very, very recently, and it was talking about there's some people that promote strictly an all-meat diet, and they talk about no vegetables. And there was a researcher in Toronto that actually did some work with this. I can't remember his name now. But it's interesting that in a study where they had 99 respondents, people that were in wheelchairs, some people that had chronic gut issues, skin issues, depression, anxiety issues, by going on a strictly meat diet, they were able to eliminate all these symptoms that they were having. And the person that was discussing this actually said, well, if there is a reason for a meat diet or strictly 100% carnivore diet, you know, let's analyze, look at it from a very scientific perspective. Let's analyze why would that possibly or potentially work. And what really became intriguing for me is when we talk about inflammation, animals are able to run away, avoid humans. You know, they don't want to be used up as food, right? So animals have their own mechanisms of eluding the predator, whether it's a human predator or whatever the other type of predator it may be. But plants, they're not mobile. They can't run away. So plants have their own ingredients within themselves, their own constituents within themselves that act as retardants, whether it's a bitterness of somebody, if an animal eats the leaf, or, you know, it's a poison effect or whatever the case may be. Now, we have figured out certain plants that are very detrimental to human intake, so we don't eat those plants. But there are other ones that we may be partaking in, which may have a slow, delayed allergic type response or a poisoning, if you will, based upon accumulation. So, for example, the oxalates that you find in certain types of vegetables, right? Or there's many different components, and we can get into some of those components. But what I found very interesting was that the rationale that plants have these chemicals that in accumulation over time will become irritating to us and cause inflammation, which then causes many of these symptomologies that we have, the gut dysbiosis, cramping sensations, anxiety, depression. So the person that was actually narrating this talked about he was on a meat diet and was on, I think, legumes and beans, and that was the only vegetable he was taking. His daughter said, stop that. He's like, all I'm doing is meat and beans and celery. And she says, stop that. He stops it, and he said in 1 week, he had a 75% improvement. I'm sorry, 25% improvement in his anxiety level. In 2 weeks, 75% improvement in his anxiety level. And every day from that point on, with his anxiety levels continued to drop with no medication. Mm-hmm. Now, I found that fascinating. And again, if science is the observation, right, the first form of observation, we got to observe this and look at this and see what's going on here.
You know, here's what occurs to me. It reminds me of something Liam Sheff used to say about those that, you know, were like doing massive amounts of meat, that they would mimic, in other words, their behaviors would start being altering, even facial features would start altering towards the animal that they're consuming constantly. Like some of their behaviors would manifest in a human trait, if you will. And I think you had said about strategies of those that are trying to outrun, you know, you eat certain things and you might mimic the energy it manifests. But, you know, the concern I have metabolically for an all-meat diet, obviously, even meat and beans, so much protein, is we talk about the inability to digest, break down properly, and the stress on the liver and the kidneys with, you know, excess production of waste like uric acid. These are the long-term ramifications of those that go on to high meat. They may see temporary improvement by reducing refined carbohydrates or eliminating them altogether, which I think we could really do well with in the West that eats so many refined carbs.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Robert. And there's other aspects of a high meat diet. You have the arachidonic acid, and you have a lot of other components that having too much meat can create problems. So you've got issues like with gout and this and that. But you also have to look at the possibility that there's relative mineral deficiencies in those situations. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't promote an all-meat diet. I promote a balanced diet. But what I found interesting was that certain things like spinach, for example, which I love and that I've always promoted, but if you have more than 5.5-6 pounds of spinach in a day, you can start to create some massive issues. And there have been cases of people actually having died, again, compared to pharmaceuticals, nothing like that, but
yeah,
died after consuming high levels of certain types of vegetables. So balance is the key, but I found it interesting that if a person is having problems from an elimination diet standpoint, with a delayed IgG-mediated allergy type standpoint, it might be a good idea to eliminate all vegetables, just go on a meat diet for a week or so, and then see how the symptoms change, and then introduce, one or two vegetables at a time and see if that's what's causing the problem. I'm going to actually try that myself for something that I've kind of had an issue with. But, the problem with the delayed IgG-mediated allergy testing is that sometimes it's not reproducible. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, another aspect when we talk about diet, and I got to hang out with Jeffrey Smith. I don't know, you got to meet Jeffrey Smith at one of the TTACs, right?
I did. I didn't really talk with him much, but yeah, I definitely met him.
Well, he's got a film out, a documentary film called Secret Ingredients. It just released DVDs and everything. And it's fascinating because they had a physician that was following a number of families, including a couple of kids that were on the autism spectrum. And they simply prescribed not a drug, not a specific diet other than, you could say in a general sense, all organic non-GMO food. These families switched over to a standard diet, and then they switched to organic non-GMO. And two of these children lost the spectrum diagnosis. Again, they weren't severe, but the moms, the dads, the grandparents, they all improved in every aspect of function. Disease processes or diagnoses were disappeared. And it was quite profound, quite profound. Super Don, go ahead. Sorry, Dr. Pitar.
It's okay. I was going to ask you when the secret ingredients, was it a specific secret ingredient they were looking at, or just the preservatives and additives and all the other things that are in the foods?
Yeah, primarily it was about the GMOs and Roundup. And of course, the reason why Jeffrey used to say just non-GMO, non-GMO, now he says, no, it has to be organic, is because even things that are grown that are non-GMO are now being exposed or doused or soaked in glyphosate, which is the main ingredient, active ingredient of Roundup. So by removing that, the improvement in all health factors was astounding. And you watch this 80-minute movie. As a doctor, a real physician, for those of the mainstream audience would say, hey, was it a real doctor? Yeah, a real doctor. Followed them all and saw improvements and elimination of certain diagnoses, not by doing anything, but by cleaning up what went into their bodies.
It makes total sense, too. So this is something I talked about in the webinar. There's a difference between being non-GMO and being organic, okay? Because Whole Foods had an issue with this where they didn't do anything wrong, but people assumed that something that was organic was also, by definition, non-GMO. That is not true. When I was trying to get grain for our cattle, the A2 cattle that I had in North Carolina, Robert, you remember what I asked you? I have a dairy cattle, right?
Yes.
We could not get non-GMO grain in North Carolina. And I remember contacting a couple of feed supplies, and I'd ask them, is your stuff non-GMO? Oh, yeah, our stuff is organic, this and that. And I said, I'm not asking if it's organic. Is it non-GMO? They would hem and haw and dance around the issue until finally saying, well, you're going to talk to the owner. The owner would call me up and I would ask him, okay, do you have non-GMO grain? And he says, no, our grain is GMO. It is organic, but it is genetically modified. And we have to go to Virginia to get non-GMO. So I think that's important for people to understand the difference between organic and non-GMO, and make sure you get organic non-GMO food. That's the best way of making sure they have both components.
Exactly. And in dealing with inflammation, even, we've talked, since you bring up cows, cattle, milk, right? Raw milk is the only real milk. If you pasteurize and homogenize, you've altered it. Obviously, if it's a factory farmed animal, everything they put in that animal is going to end up in the milk. And it's interesting, there's a study coming out, or they're working on it, called The Farm Milk Effect on Trial. And they are doing a raw milk trial, a real large-scale trial on the benefit to children with allergies specifically. You know, those that are drinking pasteurized, homogenized milk versus those that are drinking raw milk. And this is just in the beginning phases. We don't have results yet. But the word is out that there's a difference between milk that is factory farm processed and that which comes from a cow that's eating as it's designed by God to eat grass, and then watch the difference in health in those who drink it.
Yeah, I remember hearing a lecturer who said, he's trying to be funny, he said that humans are the only species that drinks milk outside of their own species. So if you want to drink milk, then find a lactating human female, and everybody, of course, laughs. But the thing is this, I don't believe that it's a problem for us to consume milk from another species. I think it's the problem for us to consume milk from another species when we have adulterated and contaminated and changed that substance. As you said, you homogenize it, you pasteurize it, you genetically modify it, you put genetically modified ingredients into the feed that genetically modifies the constituents of that animal, i.e. the milk. You irradiate it, and you do all these other weird things to food that so it's not even food anymore. So I think that's what the problem is when we do that to milk. And I believe that at least history tells us humans have consumed milk for at least the last 10,000 documented years. I don't know before that. I'm sure we did. But we never had many of these problems over the last 10,000 years. We started accumulating these problems in the last 5-10 decades. And
yes.
So I think that's also a big point. So, you know, raw milk is awesome, and especially if it's doing milk, milk studies. Now I'm going to do it with the non-GMO and with organic sources. Who knows what could happen?
Well said, well said. So, again, in the era of factory farming, processing, heat treating, you're not helping yourself. Eat as your ancestors did. That's what we're arguing for. Clean, organic, yes.
Robert Scott Bell Show.
In all my years of radio, I've never seen anything like this.
The Robert Scott Bell Show. Rocking the health world through the power of radio. It's the Robert Scott Bell Show.
All right, the place for health, freedom, and healing liberty. 2 hours a day, 6 days a week on GCN, our home and broadcast radio syndication. One special hour of the week, we get to do advanced medicine with Dr. Rashid Bittar. And you can listen on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, UK Health Radio, and we simulcast on YouTube. And Dr. Bittar also simulcasts through his Facebook page as well. And we're happy that you're getting it wherever you're getting it. Archives are available at Advanced Medicine and all of the places I previously mentioned. Dr. Bittar, we mentioned announcements. They're in the show notes at robertscottbell.com. Links up to Advanced Medicine and the Advanced Medicine Conference coming up Memorial Day weekend, May 25th and 26th in Pasadena, California. So plan that weekend accordingly, and we'll all get together and have a great healing reunion.
Absolutely. Looking forward to that.
So our final two stories, we'll just kind of pigeonhole them in if we can. One, our friend Sayer G talks about the study where it says basically flu virus transmission found that subjects had a 6.3 times more aerosol shedding of flu virus particles if they received a vaccination in the current and previous season compared with having no vaccination in those two seasons. Again, this is in the peer-reviewed journals. Why isn't this front page news?
Yeah, because it's not convenient. It's not convenient for the agenda, and it's not convenient for the manufacturers of the flu vaccines. But this is, when people see something like this, I want to make sure that people really get this, okay? Six-fold increase, wow, that sounds kind of high. Well, look at it from a percent standpoint. Okay, what is a six-fold increase? That's 600%. So when you think about your measly half of a percent return on your CD or on your bank account, and you look at the 6% interest rate or the 7% interest rate on your car loan, and then you start thinking about getting 100% return on your money that you invest. My God, you can double your money. This is a 600-fold increase. This is six times. When somebody says six-fold, that's a 600% increase of getting the flu by having taken the flu shot. I mean, that's just ridiculous. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. It comes back to what you and I talked about with Trump, right? Was it last week or 2 weeks ago? Where he said that he was talking about that the flu shot is the greatest scam that was ever committed on mankind or something to that extent.
Right, yes. you know, at a certain point you wake up, you got to see through this. But if you're so toxic and deficient, you're just trying to get through the next hour to your next meal. Remember, we talk about that. And this is where consciousness is limited. When, and I've said this too, you know, it's not that I'm angry at people who are ill. I was ill. But think about where can you place your focus if you're in pain and misery and fatigued all of the time? It's hard to be that great example for others. You want to help other people. Maybe you have that spiritual inclination. I want to help people. I want to give love. I want to be. And you're suffering because you don't know that what you're doing is causing the pain, the inflammation, etc. And so when we come to the vaccine issue, they try to couch it in the terms of you're being a responsible citizen. You're actually going to reduce transmission of flu. Well, it turns out if you got the flu shot last year and this year, you're six times, or as you said, 600% more likely to spread it.
Yeah. And that's a very, I mean, that's when people talk about this, well, your child hasn't gotten the flu shot or hasn't gotten the vaccinations, and it's putting all the rest of the children at risk. No, it's the other way around. The child that's gotten all these shots is actually increasing the risk of the healthy children. And if the vaccine is supposed to be so beneficial, then what are you worried about? You already got the vaccine, right? So it's a simple logic that people try to, the herd mentality, we talk about the herd immunity issue. This is a great study, and I was not aware of this, but that's, you know, I would have thought probably increased it, you know, 50%, 75%, 100%, 600%. My God, that's unbelievable.
Well, and finally, we don't have time to go into it. We got a minute left, but you know, the reality is, hopefully, it's set in for you that you're way more likely to die of chemo than you are to die of cancer. I mean, they're talking obviously millions and millions of people are going on chemo, and so they now have the analysis that says, "Yep, chemo kills."
Yeah, I mean, and it's not surprising. I mean, it could be a moment of death, right? We've been saying that for years. I mean, when you have to be concerned about something to give to a patient that's already immunocompromised. That when you're making it, the people have to wear a hazmat suit because it can be toxic to them, then where's the common sense of giving somebody who's already immunocompromised and more susceptible now that same substance that the healthy person has to wear a hazmat suit just to handle?
Incredible. But, you know, sometimes we need to point out the obvious because it's not obvious when you're toxic and deficient. And so that's what part of what we do here with Advanced Medicine each and every week with Dr. Rasha Bitar. And why you keep coming back for more. Once again, this is the place. There are archives. It never goes bad. This information is still good today and the day we started all those years ago, Dr. Bitar. So I appreciate you. We have a great time together. Everybody, get your tickets for the Advanced Medicine Conference coming up Memorial Day weekend in Pasadena, California. Dr. Bitar, tell them what they need to know before we got to go.
The power to heal is unequivocally each and every one of yours.
Robert Scott Bell Show.